Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, February 14th. Everything about Super Bowl Sunday, mostly not the game. The game was close, pretty entertaining for actual football fans, but it was the cultural and political wrappings around Super Bowl 56 that were arguably the bigger story this year. The halftime show definitely included the protests inside the stadium on that stage, though sponsored by the establishment that they would be protesting, and protests outside the stadium. You know, the Department of Homeland Security warned of anti-vax mandate truckers like those in Canada coming to snarl Super Bowl traffic. And oh, by the way, where did you watch the game, this second pandemic Super Bowl? And with what, if any, remaining precautions for yourself? We will talk about all these things, and we are so happy to have with us for this, definitely all stars in this realm, David Dennis Jr., who is a senior writer at The Undefeated, an ESPN site at the intersection of sports, race, and culture. He's also author of the forthcoming book, The Movement Made Us, A Father, A Son, and the Legacy of a Freedom Ride. You may know the father, David Dennis Sr., who was an original Freedom Rider in 1961 and an organizer of Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964. And Joel Anderson, who is a staff writer at Slate, and the host of seasons 3 and 6 of Slow Burn, the L.A. Riots. That's the podcast series about how decades of police brutality, a broken justice system, and a videotape set off 6 days of unrest in Los Angeles. Last night's Super Bowl, besides featuring the hip-hop icon's halftime show with Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, a surprise appearance by 50 Cent, Kendrick Lamar, the youngster at age 34, plus Mary J. Blige. It was there in Los Angeles at the big new SoFi Stadium, so relative to Joel's podcast. So David and Joel, so great to have you with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us, Brian. Yes, it's a pleasure.
Let me play a clip of Dr. Dre, what he said in, I guess it was the official Super Bowl news conference in the days leading up to the game and the halftime show. Here he is.
This should have happened a long time ago. As far as hip-hop, hip-hop is the biggest genre of music on the planet right now. So it's crazy that it took all of this and all of this time for us to be recognized, you know? So I think we're going to go on and do a fantastic show, and we're going to do it so big that they can't deny us anymore in the future.
So, David, was that show straight out of Compton or straight out of Hollywood C-suites?
Yeah, the show, you know, I think my takeaway was I was supposed to feel nostalgia and feel like these were the songs that I grew up with in my teenage years, which there was a little bit of that, but also it was mostly a reminder of how easy it is to sort of subvert a social justice movement when you got black folks willing to jump in front and help make that happen. I mean, this was sort of a celebration of the NFL. It was a celebration of corporations. It was to help erase, you know, Colin Kaepernick, despite what Eminem has pretended to be doing out there. And it was furthering the NFL branding that they started when they brought Jay-Z and Roc Nation on.
You had said before the game, even, that you didn't like the NFL finally having a hip-hop-centric Super Bowl halftime show. And so I guess even seeing those artists perform up there didn't change your feelings about it.
Yeah, no, I thought that it was sort of a backhanded compliment to have this be the halftime show. You have, you know, five of the biggest stars in all of music having to sort of share a stage. And I think the language is different. I mean, you've had like Aerosmith featuring other people, or you've had U2 featuring folks, but these all, you know, these artists were each big enough and successful enough and have enough hits where they could have done this by themselves. Like you can't tell me Snoop or Dr. Dre or, you know, even Eminem or Kendrick Lamar, Mary J. Blige couldn't hold a halftime show on their own, but having to share it and do a song and a half each feels like, you know, feels like a backhanded compliment. It feels like you needed that's what you need to reward hip hop with, you know, 30 minutes of stage time.
It's a great analogy there. With all those legends on one bill, would the NFL ever have asked the Rolling Stones and Aerosmith and U2 to share a 30-minute set? Joel, what's your slow burn take on what we saw last night and the venue? How much was this hip-hop halftime show because it was L.A., and how much do you think they communicated any of that relevant history?
I mean, I think there was a lot of history there. Like, in the stage, the set itself had, you know, references to common landmarks around that area that may not have existed anymore because of the presence of a stadium itself. But they did try to do some callbacks to, you know, an era about 30 years ago. And for me, you know, watching it last night, it was more surreal than anything else because, you know, keep in mind, in 1992, for instance, the emergence of Dr. Dre and Snoop and like West Coast G-Funk hip hop kicked off a national panic about gang culture and Black violence. So like, to a lot of people, and maybe even some in SoFi Stadium last night, the people on stage, with the exception of Mary J. Blige, were some of the scariest people in the world. And what was happening in the neighborhoods around there 30 years ago terrified people. And
like, quote unquote, just to make sure you're communicating what you mean to be, quote unquote, scariest people in the world to a lot of white America.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for clarifying that and expanding on that. But yes, scary to an awful lot of white people that showed up at that game. They would not have come over into Inglewood in 1992. But I would say, though, that if you go back to 1992, that fear was in part a multiracial and bipartisan fear. Like, even think about C. Dolores Tucker, who was a longtime Democratic operative and civil rights activist. Like, she was willing to team up with the likes of William Bennett, who was, you know, the former education secretary under Ronald Reagan, to protest against the growing influence of hip hop on American culture. So to see them at center stage at the biggest televised event in the country, a place where hip hop had never had that sort of platform before, it was a big deal. But to David's earlier point, yeah, it falls short because you'd like to think that Dr. Dre and Snoop could have had their own showcase and that maybe next year Mary J. Blige gets her opportunity to do it herself. But for what it was, I'm not going to pretend that it wasn't meaningful because it was meaningful in some ways.
David referred to this apparently fake controversy about Eminem planning to take a knee on stage to reference Colin Kaepernick and the NFL telling him not to, and Eminem doing it anyway. So as far as you know, what was real and what was fake there? He did take a knee. The world saw that much.
Well, I mean, I think the NFL later confirmed after the game that there was no such, I mean, there was no controversy, that nobody had told Eminem that he couldn't take a knee. And so it's the sort of thing that you do when you want to seem subversive and you're really not. And is it, I mean, it's the sort of thing that, is it actually a protest if it's been signed off on and you've already gotten approval for it? So, I mean, look, I'm not going to argue against the need for symbolism and for people to still recognize what Colin Kaepernick did and his sacrifice and his fight for social justice or whatever. But I mean, that was a ginned up controversy. That's the sort of thing that, you know, that they wanted people to talk about on social media. And the day after, they wanted people to think, oh, wow, did they do something that the NFL didn't want them to do? That, you know, that was really rebellious. But actually, it didn't seem like it was that big of a stretch for Eminem to have done that last night.
David, anything more on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I feel like if I were a rapper like Dr. Dre or somebody who had come up with F the Police, and 30 years later, I'm sort of carrying the water for the NFL and people are starting to point that out. One thing that I would like to do for PR is maybe leak a story out that I'm going to do some things that are actually really subversive against the NFL and have people believe in. So they're looking out for it. And so they're looking for Eminem to kneel. And they're looking out for me to say, I still got no love for police. And when Eminem does it, everybody points and says, oh, wow, Eminem's really honoring Colin Kaepernick. And so it worked out. It's PR 101, and it sort of worked like a charm for initially, because there are a lot of people on social media who are, you know, calling Eminem an ally and doing all that stuff. But it really just seems like it was a really planned way to make their performance seem like it was more subversive than it actually really was.
Is there something here, David, on the positive side, that even with all the disrespect that's been shown over time and up to the present, and we'll get into the Brian Flores lawsuit in a little bit, the fact that the NFL wanted to hitch its image wagon to hip-hop last night shows maybe the power of the culture is bigger than, or at least competitive with, the league establishment for which way the country is headed?
No, maybe I'm just being cynical here and just not finding the silver lining here. But no, I mean, they gave a watered down, they gave a few crumbs, right? This was all part of some sort of, union that was supposed to be happening between the NFL and Jay-Z and Roc Nation to bring social justice awareness, to bring change to the league and all that stuff. And, okay, we're going to give you some black performers and give you some hip hop artists, but also we're going to not really acknowledge the fact that there are more black folks holding microphones on the stage than they have black coaches in the NFL or black owners or black GMs in the NFL. And we're not going to have any sort of substantive change. But yeah, you get 30 minutes and it's going to increase our ratings. And we're going to get, more viewers and we're going to get more money for it. And yeah, enjoy your rap songs along the way. Like, this seemed to sort of be a very superficial gesture by the NFL that unfortunately a lot of these high powered rappers were happy to take.
David, I kept forgetting to watch the commercials. When the commercial breaks start, I reflexively hit mute. And I had to keep reminding myself to watch, unlike I do on other shows, because that's part of the Super Bowl thing. So how about you? Anything jump out for you, good, bad, or ugly, from the commercials?
I spend most of the commercial breaks just sort of deciphering the Doctor Strange trailer to see what kind of Easter eggs I can get, and that sort of, I think, speaks to the state of the commercial now. Like, the Doctor Strange commercial, I saw it first on Twitter, mm-hmm. And the same thing with the Jordan Peele movie. Like, a lot of the big movie trailers that you used to gather in front of the Super Bowl, in front of your TV for the Super Bowl to watch, they're on social media already. So those were the big splashes for me, and I was just running them back during the commercial breaks.
Let's see. Some of the tweets that are coming in. One says, crypto, crypto, crypto. Oof, maybe a dot-com bubble. Another one says, saw halftime show at Rocking Washington Heights Bar. Young, old, black, white, gay, straight, beaming. Did you notice the Scientology commercial? Someone else, my girlfriend and I watched an episode of Captain America and the Winter Soldier. I followed that with a few episodes of Dexter, alternative to the Super Bowl. Somebody else writes, this Super Bowl segment, conversation we're having, is wrapped in cynicism, justified or not. Curious as to what your guests would have liked to have seen. That's a good question, David. You want to answer that?
Yeah, I'm sort of torn on this idea about what I want. I think that I try not to disparage artists when it comes to things that are like that they find as personal milestones or things they've always dreamed of doing. And a lot of these artists, they've dreamed of doing the Super Bowl halftime show. Like, that's something that they grew up watching. They watched Michael Jackson and all that stuff. And so to ask them not to do it in spite of everything going on may not always be the most fair thing to do. But my hope is that, hip hop is supposed to be this, counterculture thing. It's supposed to be this derisive thing. And it was sort of saccharine. It was sort of like this, they were just going by the numbers. And I think that I would have liked to have seen something that said something. I mean, they were just sort of just doing the songs and dancing along, and it was just a wonderful review of like the hip hop classics that we love. But it left me wanting something substantial.
Listener tweets, can anyone explain why 50 Cent was upside down? And does anyone know how long he had to be pre-stationed that way before the act?
Right. I guess they're not familiar with the In the Club video, because that's how 50% performs in the In the Club video that came out in 2003, 2004. So that was a throwback to that moment. That's what I saw, that there was a lot of confusion as to why he was upside down, but that's why. If you go on YouTube and look up that video, that's how he performed throughout it.
And David, what's happening with the Brian Flores lawsuit as far as you can tell? And is it having an effect, or, Is it affecting hiring at all or anything else out of court? I mean, certainly the NFL has denied the allegations and put forth what they see as some competing pieces of evidence. Like, I think John Elway from the Denver Broncos, one of the teams that allegedly didn't take Brian Flores' coaching application seriously, taking a late-night flight to get to his interview with Flores for the coaching job he didn't get. So, I don't know. How do you see the state of that lawsuit a little less than 2 weeks after it was filed?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about the lawsuit is that it's caused a whole lot of hit dogs to holler in the NFL. And it's cause of calamity with two franchises in particular. The Miami Dolphins, obviously, who fired Flores, they went out and hired Mike McDaniel, who is, you know, not doesn't have a long track record of doing much coaching. And definitely was never a head coach, a coordinator. They hired him, and he has, you know, his dad is black, but he has always sort of called himself multiracial, sort of never really identified with that part of you know, of his identity. And he's gone on sort of this press run to sort of, you know, talk about his where exactly he identifies. But, you know, he still counts as a person of color. And then the Texans, who Flores, you know, was in position to have a job for, who just fired a qualified black coach who was also under fire, who was also under fire for doing so. They wanted to hire Josh McCown, who was an unqualified white guy, and they couldn't because of the Flores spotlight. So they went out and they hired a black coach who also is not really that qualified, who's had a few bad runs in the NFL. But hey, they got a black guy. So the NFL is just sort of scrambling right now. There's, you know, we're going to see what happens if they get to any discovery, if any more black coaches come out and say things. But I think there's a sense of trying to move past this if you're the NFL, which is why one of the reasons why they had so much stuff going on in the Super Bowl for black folks to sort of put some band-aids on it. But Flores, this thing is not going away. He's understood that his career is probably over in the NFL. So I don't see him, you know, just tossing this aside or taking a settlement. NFL has a long fight ahead.
All right, guys, before you go, where did you watch and what did you eat? Joel?
Well, I watched at home. I'm still abiding by the idea that there's a deadly pandemic going on. So I was here at home with my wife.
The first time the word pandemic has been spoken
right
by anybody but me in the introduction in the whole like 43 minutes of this segment.
Yeah, no, we have some health concerns around here, so we're keeping it close to the house. But I'm here on the West Coast, and so, you know, we ordered some bulgogi fries and Korean style tacos, you know, because, you know, that's how we do out here on the West Coast. So, yeah, that's how I did it. But that's how I always prefer to watch the Super Bowl. I'm a weird football fan in that way, in that I actually want to watch the game and don't like a lot of distractions. So, mm-hmm. Just sitting in my own living room is the best way to experience the game for me.
David, same question.
Yeah, I'm still you know, believing in this whole pandemic thing and understand that it exists. So family stayed in the living room, watched TV, had some tacos. I'm on deadline, so I was typing while I was
watching. That's right, you were working.
I was working and watching. And of course, you know, as part of the job, you got to be in tune to the stuff that goes on during the Super Bowl. So yeah, that was pretty much it. It was pretty much low key. And I'm a washed old dad, so I fell asleep probably right after the final buzzer.
You missed the women's bobsled. Joel Anderson.
I have to catch it on the Peacock app.
We thank Joel Anderson, who's a staff writer at Slate and the host of seasons 3 and 6 of Slow Burn, the L.A. Riots. That's the podcast series about how decades of police brutality, a broken justice system, and a videotape set off 6 days of unrest in Los Angeles. And David Dennis Jr., who is a senior writer at The Undefeated, an ESPN site at the intersection of sports, race, and culture. He is also of the forthcoming book, The Movement Made Us, A Father, A Son, and the Legacy of a Freedom Ride. David, please come back when the book actually comes out in May. And thank you both very much for joining us on this morning after the Super Bowl.
I'll be happy to. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure. A lot of fun.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.